Blog Talk Radio.
You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. Welcome to episode 6 of the Money Motivation Podcast, an unscripted view into the game of business and money. We wanted to go ahead and get started with y'all. We're glad to be back, as I always say, back in the saddle with anybody out there listening. I've got a couple of our Money Motivation Squad members. We didn't want to waste no time getting started, considering we did obviously take a little break based on everything that's been going on. But yeah, we can't stop trying to secure the bag, if you will. So I'm gonna say what's up to my man Mark Ranger as well as Johannes Harrison. Thank you, fellas, for being with us this evening. We're gonna jump right into this thing. So if y'all will give a little background,
yeah,
and then I'm gonna let new listeners hear our format for tonight. But let's go ahead and get them introduced to our players for tonight, because we run this thing like a game. But we'll explain it after we get y'all introduced to two of our Money Motivation Squad members. Go ahead, Mark. How you doing this evening?
Oh, everything good. Looking forward to it. Back in the game, but Mark Ranger here. I lead a group of financial advisors in Southern California. I work with entrepreneurs to help them make more money, be successful, and create change. I work with about 300 advisors managing $22 billion plus in assets. And I also own Money Motivation Brand, which is a lifestyle clothing brand with a mission of inspiring a life of power and freedom. And is the impetus for this podcast, as well as the media aspect, which is what we are doing today. I live in Southern California. I do own a home. I also do invest in the stock market. I love what I do, and I'm looking forward to the call today.
No, absolutely. Glad to have you back. Johannes, glad to have you back as well. Johannes Harrison, CEO of Money Script Wealth Management. Go ahead and give people a little more of your background before I give them the format and get this game tipped off.
Indeed, I appreciate it. It's good to be back. So, Johannes Harrison, I'm CEO of Money Script Wealth Management and the Money Script, which is a financial literacy brand. And in the Money Script Wealth Management, I work with clients all over the United States to help them make better decisions with their money. I work with entrepreneurs, I work with physicians, I work with anyone that is working hard to reach their financial goals and just needs a little bit more guidance on what's the best thing to do. I live in Dallas, Texas also. I'm a homeowner. I invest in the stock market. I also have a real estate portfolio and just dipped my toe into the trucking business. So that's going to be interesting. I'm excited to see where that takes me. Other than that, happy to be here and good to see you again, Mark. We just wrapped another podcast not too long ago, so you're going to have double trouble this week.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I jumped on Johannes' podcast last week, so we had a lot of fun having a good discussion there. So it's a long time no talk for us. And Johannes just had a birthday, too. Happy birthday, yo.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. The big 4-0, it's good to be here. Good to be here. This is the peak earning years, is what I'm told.
There we go. We get it.
All right, let's make it happen. So for anybody out there listening, we're going to run this thing like a game. We're going to keep it short and sweet and get through this game, as I call it. So basically, I will ask both of our members a question that is basically the tip-off, and that's quarter one. They'll both answer it. Then the second quarter, I'm going to have Johannes ask Mark a question. So when he answers that question, that'll be quarter two. We'll go to a brief halftime. After the halftime, Mark, you'll turn around and ask Johannes a question. That'll be the third quarter, and as always, we have a specially prepared fourth quarter for those out there listening. So to get this thing started, this evening's tip-off question is simply, I dub this as securing generational wealth. And so I've always heard that for the wealthy, there's a number that often y'all are trying to get to that y'all will consider, I have reached my goal. Y'all typically are working very hard to get to a specific number. From what I understand, that number typically entails securing whatever businesses you may want to maintain, in a sense, or pass down to your family, if you will, or possibly even make a certain amount of money off those businesses. But there's a number you want to get to, again, to maintain the businesses, as well as leave generational wealth. Whereas most of us out here are just trying to get as much as we can, maintain ourselves in retirement if possible, and hope to leave a little something. I've always understood the wealthy, in a sense, have a number that they are trying to reach. I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but I've heard it. So, Mark, I'm going to start with you. Is there a number in mind, and how did you come up with that number, if, in fact, that what I've heard is correct? But even if it's not, I'm pretty sure there's a plan for how you're going to do it, even if there is a number or not. Go ahead, brother, if you will.
Yeah, the first time that I actually did this exercise was, it was in 2014. And I did come up with a number, and that number was $15 million. The minimum number was $15 million, and that's 15 liquid. So I'm not talking about including illiquid assets, real estate, your home, anything to that effect, or other assets that might be illiquid. I'm talking about liquid that you could access very quickly, not the sale of a business or anything like that or any of those assets, but liquid money, $15 million. And the way that I came up with that was a number of different things. One is taking a look at the lifestyle that I needed to make sure I could sustain was one piece. The second piece was taking a look at future generations and also the people that I'm looking to take care of. So my family and my parents and also my children, what would they need to be in a position to stand on my shoulders? Because there's a lot of different philosophies that you can have when you think about generational wealth. There's the bootstrap philosophy, meaning you're saying, hey, I went through all of this hard stuff. I want my children and family to go through the same. I'm not concerned with leaving them anything. Then there's the opportunity philosophy, which says, I at least want my children and family to have an opportunity to get to college, stand on their own two feet, and then they're on their own. So I want to have enough to make sure that happens. Or third is stand on my shoulders. I want them to be better off when I leave than when I was here. And so I factored that in to make sure that that could be a part of the game. And then I also looked at, if I were to put the money and use interest-bearing accounts that could kick off a certain amount of interest in a normal interest rate environment, could that kick off the amount of money that would need it to sustain the lifestyle that I needed to have without touching the principal? Meaning the $15 million could actually stay intact, but it's kicking off enough interest to make sure that the lifestyle could be taken care of, but that $15 million at a minimum would stay intact without taking a lot of risk. So those were all the factors that I looked into. And the $15 million was the number that that I calculated. And that's, again, that's liquid assets that would need to be in hand. And that was the philosophy.
Nah, sounds good. What about yourself, Johannes? How are you looking at that future? Do you have a number? And even if you don't, can you, again, kind of give us an idea of what your plan looks like for you and your family, if you will?
So my plan evolved over time because I left corporate America about 5 years ago and started my own business as an entrepreneur. And as an entrepreneur, you're not relying on someone else, on another entity to provide a salary. You have to create that. So I was looking more at what is the amount of passive income that I need that I know that my household will be able to run. No matter if I choose to go out and make more sales and get more clients, that sort of thing, I know that this passive income is going to come in. And so I worked the number, that same number, similar to how Mark mentioned, is I work backwards from how much do I need from an income standpoint, then figure out how much that asset would have to be, or what are going to be the sources of revenue that are going to create that nugget. So that number is $30,000 a month before taxes. So worst case scenario, if all that money's taxable and then my family's netting $15,000 a month, we can take care of everything with $15,000 a month. But more than likely, those sources of income will be strategically placed across different buckets and different tax revenues. But nonetheless, I would need about $6 million if that were in an asset position. And as it currently stands, I'll be there by the time I'm 55. And that's just if my income keeps going up by an inflationary amount of, call it 5% a year, I'll have the $6 million by 55, which for me is 15 years from now. I just turned 40. But hopefully, the goal is that, not hopefully, I will. I'll get there a lot faster. But that's the number. Right now, I'm trying to build that from I'm trying to get to the 30,000 number a little bit faster than that from reoccurring sources of revenue. So be that my insurance business, income from my real estate portfolio, income from the truck that's going to start coming in here soon. I've also got some production deals that I got going, so Hollywood's starting to pay some checks. So trying to accumulate all of those. So between both of them, I should hit the goal a lot faster. So, but yeah, that's kind of how I approached it.
Okay, so now it's nice to hear you both have a number. Again, I'd always heard that. My first time hearing someone kind of describe how did they come up with the number and how they plan to get there. So pretty unique for me, again, to be able to just ask y'all that question. Unless y'all have anything additional you want to add, we can get started with the second quarter. Again, just want to check before we get that second quarter started. Any other additional thoughts in reference to having a number? Again, for when most people don't have a number, they typically are having to go to someone like a Johans to say, who's trying to tell them you should have a number, you know, based on your things, you know, you being an advisor and things of that nature. But any thoughts from y'all before we jump into the second quarter?
Well, just a simple thought that, look, anything you do, whether if you're in business, if you're trying to invest, if you're trying to do real estate, if you're trying to be wealthy, having a number is actually where everything starts, because the number, how fast you want to get there, what you want to provide, if you don't have that number, you really don't have a direction around what levers you need to pull to even get there. If you got nothing to aim at, you got nothing to be able to figure out. So, I mean, that's to me where everything starts, is figuring out what that number needs to be. And that is the basis by which you can build a plan in order to figure it out. And when I say a plan, I mean your game plan to get there, not a financial plan, but your game plan. What is the game plan in order to get there? So trying to identify that number. And that doesn't mean it's not going to change. That's the other thing. People don't want to do a number because they feel like they're bound by it. The number might change. And typically it does. Things might change in your situation. So, yeah, I definitely say it's important to figure out what is that number and be aggressive with it too. I don't think it serves anybody any good to be shy about something that they might want when they're trying to establish that number, because you can create pressures on yourself, and many times when you do that, you tend to be your most creative to go out and get it.
Nah, sounds great. So let's go ahead and kick off this second quarter, Johans. If you will, I think I will ask him who I said it was going to be you, Johan. I think we're going to go ahead and start the second quarter. It really doesn't matter. Whoever wants to go ahead and let's keep it simple. Whoever wants to ask the question of the other, that'll be the second quarter, and then we'll, of course, we'll flip it out to halftime. So either one of you can kind of get started with this.
I did not come prepared with a question. And so, Mark, I'm going to assist it to you.
Yeah. So, all right, Johan, let me ask you this. You've been successful. You own a business. You own multiple businesses. You got your hands in multiple things. You're taking care of your family. You also are very effective at advising other people financially about what they should be doing. So there's certain habits, I'm sure, that you've developed over time or changed over time, because I know you have evolved and we all evolve. So my question to you is, in terms of you achieving your level of success, what would you consider your success habits? Like, what are your success habits that you believe are important that you've developed that has gotten you where you are today, but also will make sure you continue to get to the marks that you talked about earlier and continue to grow?
Ooh, man, good one. Okay. So the success habits that I believe have attributed to my continued and sustained success and taken to the next level over and over again, the number one is the numbers, what we were already talking about earlier. I am religious when it comes to numbers. I got to know the numbers. I got to know the numbers of what it's going to take for me to reach my goals. And like I said, as a business owner, if I don't go out and collect it, then the mortgage doesn't get paid. So there's no sick time. There's none of that exists. I have to create all of it. So I know down to the, you know, to the detail, fine detail, how much money it takes to run my household. I know I'd sit down with Alicia often and we review what those expenses are, what changes we can make, how we want to invest our money, how we want to save, et cetera. So knowing the numbers is number one. Number two is understanding that success will come through a system. And a system is anything that you do repeatedly. So simple thing, brushing teeth. You want to keep all your teeth, then you got to brush them and take care of them. That's a system that you put in place to help keep your teeth. Same thing in business. If I want to have a good client experience that's repeatable for each client so that they continue to refer, I have to have a system. I can't do it a different way with every single client. Now, yes, all clients can have different goals, et cetera, but I have to have a system taken through. So I put that system in place. And then I would say the third one, that, and this is where the most change has come, and it goes back to those numbers. And Mark, we talked about this briefly last week, or you brought it up right at the end of our call, is the Profit First book that I read. And it's not so much as that book, but that is the one book that changed, that took me to the next level recently. And I can go back and I can probably point out 2, 3, or 4 books that I've read over the last 4 or 5 years that dramatically changed how I think about my business. So being open to learn new ideas and strategies and to put them into place, so that then we can reach those financial goals. And I got to wrap it up with the fourth. This one wasn't in there, but it's got to be in there, is just having the goals and ambition and that motivation and the internal motivation of wanting to just get out there and get it every single day and make an impact and change people's lives and change the course of history for the people that come after me and after me and after me again, because that's really why I'm doing this every day. There's been a cycle of poverty in my family, and it stops with me. And that goes for my siblings, and that goes for...
No, I absolutely respect that. Mark, let's do this. Let's throw that back at you. Share some of your habits before we go to the halftime, if will. And you can keep it brief if you like. We're free-flowing, so if you want to get them all out, it's up to you. But, yeah, definitely share with the audience some of your habits. As a friend of yours, I admire the fact that you've always had the habits to get you in the position that you're in now and, in the way you want to go. So, if you will, share those as well.
So I definitely think that work ethic is paramount, and I've tried to develop a vicious work ethic to go all in, sometimes, to a fault. But I think a vicious work ethic has definitely been something I've tried to continually hone and develop and get better and better, because there's always somebody out there trying to outwork you. So my thing has always been the hustle and have that. Being a student of the game, I think I constantly always think about how I can be developing myself. I think that's something you have to do. And so I put it on myself to say, how can I be a student of the game and continue to develop? I think I know everything, but I don't know everything, but I got to keep developing myself. So how can I be a student of the game? Being authentic, being real. I think it's important. People connect to people who are authentic. And if you're grounded in who you are and confident in who you are and can be authentic, I think that can, I believe at least, it has helped me to go some places that it wouldn't have otherwise, where a lot of times people are trying to be somebody else or trying to be fake. I think trying to be authentic is something I've tried to hone in as a habit. Making myself uncomfortable. This is a hard thing to do, but my biggest growth has always been when I've been uncomfortable. And sometimes you have to create that growth. Sometimes it comes externally, like things will happen and it makes you uncomfortable. But sometimes we get complacent. I know I get complacent. I get complacent sometimes, and then I say, wait a minute, I got to shake out of this. I need to do something to make myself uncomfortable, because discomfort creates growth. And so I try to make sure I'm always finding ways or looking for the opportunities. I know this sounds funny, but to be uncomfortable, because that's where I found the biggest growth, and sometimes I have to create that discomfort myself. The last thing I'll say is to never give it up as a habit. I think the number one rule in business is to keep getting up, because you're going to get knocked down. You're going to get, you're going to fall. You're going to make mistakes. There's going to be a lot of things that occur. But those that are successful in business and those that make a lot of money, I have observed that it's not necessarily they got the greatest product or the greatest idea, but they persevere more than anybody else, and they'll never give up. So I've tried to make it a habit of mine to say, all right, if I'm going in on something, I'm going in on it. I might innovate, I might change directions, I might do some of that, but I'm not giving up. And as long as I don't give up, I can win, because nobody can take that from me. They can take a lot of other things, but they can't take that will. So never giving up, I say, is the last one that's probably the most important.
No, I absolutely respect that. You made me think of getting comfortable, being uncomfortable. That's a big thing for Andre Ward, for those of you out there that may be boxing fans. I know Mark is a boxing fan. That brother retired 32-0. And that's what he said was the thing. He was always comfortable with being comfortable. If you ever go see an Andre Ward fight, it can go ugly or pretty, But either way, he was always comfortable, and that often would be the difference. So absolutely respect all of y'all advice. Definitely poignant, and it makes sense for, in a sense, why y'all on the path that y'all are on. Let's go to our halftime. I'm definitely prepared for the third quarter. So glad to have you on, Johannes. Don't worry about it. Matter of fact, it's perfect timing considering everything that's going on. I'm ready for the third quarter, so no worries there. All right, let's go to this halftime, and we'll come back with the third quarter and get y'all out of here. Let's do it.
The Money Motivation brand currently exists. It's a success in lifestyle clothing brand primarily, and it was created because we saw the demand, and it was created in 2017, and we saw the demand for the self-made modern entrepreneur, business leader, high achiever. There was a gap in a prominent streetwear brand that really embodied their journey. So I wanted to take that concept and create a clothing brand that can embody that with a mission that's very simple, which was to inspire a life of excellence and freedom, to promote independent thinking, hard work, taking risks, having a relentless commitment to what you do and a never giving up type attitude. Those are all hallmarks of the brand. And the product line consists of premium T-shirts, outerwear, headwear, accessories, canvas prints, and the like. But there's also a media aspect to this, which dovetails into this podcast actually being created, where I really want to help people be successful in business and build businesses and wealth and be able to enjoy it while they're here, as well as build it for future generations. But it's about being able to live a life of autonomy. And that's been a big part of my motivation to be in the financial industry and also have a brand that can represent that. So the hope is this can influence people to think differently.
Hashtag I am the hustle. So I'm rocking my Money Motivation gear right now, even though y'all can't see me. But absolutely, for anybody out there listening, get access to the Money Motivation brand and lifestyle and brand, if you will, at moneymotivation.com. Moneymotivation.com. And for you listeners out there, you actually get a discount when you go to the website and simply put in MM Podcast. MM Podcast. Go to the site, look at the amazing line of brand that we have, and literally put in the MM Podcast and save 20%. To get started off with this third quarter, again, this is the Money Motivation Podcast, Episode 6. Our guests, our squad members, I should say, Mark Ranger and Johannes Harrison. We actually, perfect timing. Again, we took a break because of everything that was going on in our country. And there's a quote that you put up today, Mark, that I've heard you say many a times, but you shared it with the public today, and I'm actually going to bring it to the table and have both of you speak on it. And matter of fact, we'll assist it to Johannes because he may have seen it, but we're going to hear what he has to say. And Mark, you can kind of come up and clean up your own quote that you shared today, which is very poignant to the times that are happening right now. And what you said was, you can have power through an economic base without education and politics, but you can never have power through education and politics without an economic base. When you only have education and politics, you have an illusion of power. I think that's pretty clear, Johannes. Any thoughts in reference to Mark's quote that he shared on his Instagram page today?
You're referring to the quote that I immediately shared again, sent to my assistant, and said, make sure you share this again. Yeah, that quote.
That one that I've been sharing all day myself. So absolutely, yeah. That quote. Go ahead, brother.
So what's funny about that is Mark, I don't think we really talked about it that much on the podcast. I have to go back and listen again. By the way, that's the Money Script podcast. So Mark is featured on that. That one's coming out this week. More on that later. He embodied what I've been shouting from the mountaintops since I became an independent advisor. Actually, it actually happened when I was in my last few years in corporate, when I really took an interest in educating our youth about financial literacy, because I realized that a lot of the clients that come to me, I mean, sometimes they don't know the basics of, you know, how inflation works, how investment accounts work. And even I meet people that are highly educated. For a long time, I worked with a rocket scientist. He literally was a rocket scientist, but couldn't understand a stock, bond, mutual fund, you know, to save his life. And as we came into the George Floyd and the aftermath that has ensued after it, and the fact that it appears we're making a real legitimate move towards some better civil rights, it's still going to need that economic base. If we don't own our own neighborhood, if we don't own our own homes, if we don't own our own businesses, if we're not taking that money to then reinvest into education, to reinvest into politics, and that's the thing, politics these days takes money. So there needs to be an economic base behind that in order to really have a movement and have success, because they can change the laws all they want. But if the majority of us, I think the latest number I heard was 68 or something like that percent, 68% of Black America lives in poverty, the laws won't really help. So there's got to be a change in the purse, a change in the pocketbook, a change in the assets, and a change in the education, the financial education, the financial literacy of Black and brown people, if we ever really want to have any real power. So I agree 10 times over. Well put. You see how many words it took me to say what Ranger managed to get out in a tweet.
Nah, I love it. I'm going to steal a couple of words from you, Mark, because I know you're going to say this, so you're going to have to say something else. But as you always say, we've had a civil rights movement, we've had a political movement, but we are yet to have an economic movement within our community. So I'm going to steal your thunder and make you jump off from there. But amazing quote. It aptly applies to what we're experiencing now. I'm going to turn it over to you, brother.
I stole your words.
I did it on purpose, because I need you to go somewhere else. I've been rocking with you for a long time, brother, so I know you was going to start with that. So I had to throw a little monkey wrench in there, because I want to go a little deeper with you, brother. So I had to steal your words and make you go a little deeper. So what you got for us?
No. That's all right. I mean, it just points to having a reversal in our thinking and an innovation in our thinking. To put it this way, the educational side. I mean, we preach that. Get an education. Nothing wrong with it. I have 2 degrees. I had great education. All of those things. I've come from a family of educated people. There were no dumb rangers. We got scholarships and people got educated. That is nothing wrong with that. But the point is this. Power is about influence and being able to influence the things that go on with you, your family, and your communities and the things around that. And an individual that has a GED but has $1 million is far more powerful than a PhD with no money. Far more powerful. It's not that PhD can't live a good life, but the GED with $1 million is more empowered to control and influence the life around him. That's the idea. So when we talk about the economic base, that's a piece. The political side of things, yes, you cannot possibly think that you can control what goes on politically in your community without having an economic base that can influence who gets elected. Anybody who believes that is ridiculous. If you don't own anything in those communities to be able to influence what happens in those communities, we're silly to think that there can be any change. So the point to this is understanding capitalism and not trying to change it. Because a lot of times the conversation in the African American community about how capitalism is wrong. And I'm saying, we're not going to change capitalism. That's the ladder's against the wrong wall trying to do that. That's not going to change. We got to speak their language. We got to speak that language to understand that the economic base is the way that we're going to do it. So we got to have a reversal in the thinking from not education and politics as being the first road or the base, but economics actually being the base that we then build the politics and the education and the civil rights and all the things on top of that, because without that, we have no foundation to actually control or have any means of power about things that are going on. But unless we have a cultural reversal in thought that actually gets grounded in that and stop being so tied up in believing that money is evil, or if you go after money, you're not grounded in some moral way, which is silly. It's the silliest thing in the world. Capitalism can be used to leverage what we're trying to get accomplished, and we can't have that without that economic base.
No, I love it. And if I could add a little even more context just to break down the politics, because what you hear people say as much as, you know, is you got to vote. People die for your vote, these things. And it's not that those things are not true. Our ancestors did die for, in a sense, or some of them, I should say, lost their lives and trying to make sure that we had the right to exercise our right to vote, if you will. But in people focusing in that manner, people will say it takes money to put into politics without understanding even this aspect, which speaks further to your point, Mark, which is most people don't know about 40% of the country really doesn't vote. Like, that's if you go look at the numbers, especially for general, especially not the general national elections, you definitely see about 40% of the country not voting. So that's 40% of the country not putting money in. And then as far as the rest of people, for the most part, as much as we say it's about money, we assume other cultures are putting a bunch of money into politics. Who's putting money into politics are those with discretionary funds who can actually have enough influence to say, okay, I help get you in the office. If there's an issue in my community, my local politician, I want to have access to you. So I'm just highlighting that as much as we sometimes will say it takes money and we assume other cultures are doing it, they're doing it, but not they as we think. It is those who have reached, and to your point, Mark, who have gotten the type of discretionary money to, in fact, have influence. Because making it day to day, you know, in a sense, you know, even that, you know, in a middle class way, if you will, $100 is cool, but that's not the influence. And I just wanted to kind of speak
right
to how important
right
it is to get to the kind of money you're talking about if we're going to, in fact, have influence. You can't just say that we need money to control politics. It is shooting for big dreams, as you said, no longer having this mindset that money is evil when it takes money to influence, which everybody knows it, but it leaves us
right
begging others who have it. That's what you're upset.
That's why this
is so important.
That's right. And as long and here's the thing, and none of this is saying, or even that quote is saying, that education and voting does not matter or you shouldn't do it. That's not, nobody interpret that way, because that I get that sometimes. Would you say you should? No, of course you should vote. You better vote, actually. It's your responsibility. Yes, we did have people that died. Why would we need or get the right to vote if you didn't do it? And I don't care that you don't like the candidates. The issue is your responsibility is go do the best that you can with your best preference and exercise that right to vote. That's the idea. Same thing with education, to help to position yourself in the world and become smarter by pursuing that, and give yourself a standing ground in terms of how you can operate and understand how to find knowledge and negotiate and broker knowledge. Education is extremely important, but it's the economic piece that is always missed, that for some reason people don't put the same priority, not some people, black people don't put the same priority on, that we have to change. And money, look, as long as the value surrounding your purpose when you're talking about money and generating money, as long as the values surrounding that are just and good, there's nothing wrong with going after money and it being a for-profit scenario for you and your family. Matter of fact, especially as a man, that's your responsibility to leave your family better than when you came, versus just leaving debt in your last name. But we got to have a reversal in that thought process.
Now, Money Motivation Squad member Michael Sutler, he and I have talked about it. And he once said this, and I think it absolutely applies to exactly what you're saying right now. Conscious money changes the world. And it's just being conscious in a sense, obtaining the money and keeping a conscious about yourself. The evil and the downplay of money are those who just pursue it incessantly without any type of consciousness. You know, that's not what you're suggesting at all. But as long as you maintain your consciousness to your goal, your family, to your community, then you absolutely need assets, and it makes a lot of sense. So definitely appreciate that.
Hold on,
it's perfect that we were able to. Now, go ahead, please jump in.
I want to add on to that because conscious investing will also change the world. Because as you make that money, and to Mark's point, as you consciously invest that money into, especially in the local election, I mean, that's the place where we could have the biggest amount of influence overnight. I mean, the local elections, I looked the number, it's less than 20% on average. In 15 of the most populous cities in America, it's less than 20% on average actually vote in local elections. That's the superintendents, schools, judges, who decides how many years you're going to get for that marijuana offense. That's the district attorneys, and they're going to go make that deal with that judge. That's the sheriffs that are in charge of the police and making the agreements with the unions. That's local voting. And to get people that we want to win, we're going to have to invest in them. We're going to have to invest in them. That's the community. That's the grassroots. That's the stuff that Barack Obama won on, was the grassroots efforts. We need those grassroots efforts in all of our local communities, because we could change the entire city council overnight. Because it's a popular vote. There's no electoral college. It's popular vote. And we have the numbers. We just got to get out there and invest, consciously invest, so we can make some changes.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, let's go ahead into our specially prepared fourth quarter. If you're a first-time listener, right now we play tribute to none other than a Kobe Bean Bryant. Obviously tragic to lose that brother last year. Mark, our CEO, is out in L.A. He and I both were big L.A. Lakers fans. He's moved on to the Clippers. I always call him out for that. But every same time, he has a great love for Kobe. I'll give you a heads up, Mark. This clip is going to be a little longer than what you'd like. But I think when you hear the end, you'll understand. I just couldn't leave the end off. And all we simply do to close out the fourth quarter is we listen to this cut. And y'all both give your thoughts on it. And we'll be out of the game. So let's go ahead and listen this cut.
Everything was done to try to learn how to become a better basketball player. Everything. And so when you have that point of view, then literally the world becomes your library to help you to become better at your craft.
And as I'm walking onto the court, who do I see? I see Kobe Bryant, already working out. And I'm like, okay, it's kind of cool. It's Kobe. So I worked out for a good hour and a half. And when I came off, after I was done, I sat down. And, of course, I still hear the ball bouncing. I look down, I'm like, this guy's still working out. So he was working out. Like, it looks like he was in a dead sweat when I got here. And he's still going. And it's not like his moves are nonchalant or lazy. He's doing, like, game moves, you know. I sit there and I unlace my shoes. I'm like, I want to see how long this goes. I sit out there and watch. Another 25 minutes. And he got done. I said, okay, I think I've seen enough. Go play, you know, come back. Get in the sauna, get ready for the game. That game, he drops 40 on us, okay? And after the game is over, I'm like, I have to ask this guy. Like, I have to understand, like, why he works like that.
Right.
So after the game is over, I'm like, hey, Kobe, like, why were you in the gym for so long? He's like, because I saw you come in. And I wanted you to know that it doesn't matter how hard you work, that I'm willing to work harder than you.
Wow.
And he's like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I'm not saying I dislike you as a person. You inspire me to be better.
Right.
And it was the first time I started to see this level of competitiveness where I said, I need to start doing more.
Right.
Wow.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, you know, it's competitiveness, yes, but it's a simple theory or idea to live life by. If you're going to do something, do it to the best of your ability, no matter what it is. If you're going to do it to the best of your ability.
If you love what you do and it's making you happy, all the hard work and perseverance will pay off. I once had a guidance counselor tell me that I shouldn't play basketball, that it would never amount to anything for me. His negativity towards me made me stronger. You can't stop people from trying to limit your dreams, but you can stop it from becoming a reality. Your dreams are up to you. I encourage you to always be curious, always seek out things you love, and always work hard once you find them.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. God, I love you guys. And I love you guys. And my family. To my family, my wife, Vanessa, our daughters, Natalia and Gianna, you know, thank you guys for all your sacrifice. You know, for all the hours I spent in the gym working and training. And Vanessa, you holding down the family the way that you have. I can't, there's no way that I can thank you enough for that. So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And what can I say? Mamba out.
Mamba out. Johannes, I've come to learn you're a fan of Kobe as well. So a lot to unpack there. So eerie that Mark was saying some of the same things prior to that cut, but that's the beauty of doing a podcast of this nature organically, no script, if you will, an unscripted view into the game of business and money. But any thoughts from you, Johannes, if you will, from that cut?
Yeah, personally, what stood out most to me was the comment of, you know, I worked harder when you came in. I'm in a unique situation where I just had one of my team members, one of my staff, my analyst, decided that he wants to get licensed and basically become an advisor. And I haven't led a team of advisors in 5 years. So to know that I'm going to have another advisor watching, I mean, that is, I was back in my corporate days, I was killing it for a minute. And a lot of that had to do with I had so many people watching me. And the one thing, I mean, we used to have these things called phone clinics where we'd spend, you know, 3 hours on a night just hammering the phone. And I would get in there as a manager, as a leader, and like, no one's going to out-dial me tonight. I'm going to make more phone calls than all of you, and I'm making $20,000-$25,000 a month. I don't need to do this, but I'm going to show you that you can't outwork me. And it's right. Caused me to continue to grow my financial planning practice, even as I was becoming a corporate leader, because I just was relentless when it came to work outwork my team members to show them that they can work even harder than what they're doing. And, you know, to take all the no's in the face, like, yeah, tell me no, please. I'm begging you, please tell me no. You know, with prospects and, you know, that cold calling back in the day. So that's what stuck out most for me, is because I'm getting back into that now, where I'm going to have, you know, a new advisor that is looking to build a practice as well. And I get to be his Kobe, essentially, because that's, he actually gave me a similar analogy. I had that conversation with him today, actually, and he was saying, you know, he said, I see you out here basically being Kobe. That's exactly what he said. And he said, I want to be on the Lakers. He said, he was using the analogy of Ron Artest, Meta World Peace, where he said, look, I want to be on the Lakers so I can play with you. I want to win a championship with you. So that's the situation we're in now. That's what stood out the most to me.
Beautiful. Mark, we turn it over to you. In a sense, to close us out, your thoughts. The work ethic is your number one habit, so I know that speaks dearly to you, but I'll, again, let you point out what stood out the most. And that was Jason Williams, for anybody out there listening, that you heard on the cut, talking about working out, you know, aside Kobe and finding out Kobe without working still. So that was Jason Williams. For anybody out there listening, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I got three things from that. One was, can the price? I mean, what was embedded in that is Kobe saying, I'm willing to pay the price. Like my dad, he's always said to me, he said, you got to pay the price to live a life. Like, that was one of the things that always stuck with me. And what Kobe was saying in there is, look, I'm willing to pay this price, because the price got to be paid to get what I'm trying to get, to become a better basketball player every day, is how he started it. And there's a price to that. That was the first thing that stood out. The second is the mental toughness. When he was talking about not letting Jason Williams outwork him, that is a mental toughness that comes with being in the gym as long as he was, seeing somebody come in, deciding he's going to stay, continue to work, go through that pain, mentally letting the other guy know that he's not going to outwork me, but having the mental toughness to stay in there and actually do that. I mean, there's a stubbornness almost that reflects. Like, you got to be stubborn. You got to be a mentally tough type attitude, is what I took out of that piece. And then the last piece was that it's a game of inches. It's like an underlying thing I would say. This is a game of inches. If you look at Jason Williams and Kobe Bryant, okay, you could arguably say, with them being in the NBA, and Jason Williams, was he a number one pick? I think he was, right?
Yes, he's definitely a number one pick. Absolutely. Coming
out of
Duke.
Number one pick, right? Okay. So he was number one pick.
Yep, ended up having an injury and getting back pretty strong,
right.
But he definitely was a number one pick. Mm-hmm.
There you go. So you could arguably say, you know, even if there is an upper echelon of NBA players, you could arguably say that Jason Williams was an upper echelon coming into the league and when, you know, before he got hurt.
He was
going to be considered.
He was.
So, you know, you look at that in Kobe Bryant, you can say, look, it's inches between them in terms of athletic ability and, you know, what they can do on the court. And that game of inches, there's an edge. It's like a slight edge. There's an edge that you need to create. And just that slight edge and that one inch makes all the difference in the world. It's like that makes the total difference to then separate Kobe's legacy. I mean, I know Jason Williams got hurt, so we don't really know what his legacy would have been. But it's just that slight game, that slight inch, that edge that you can create in anything that you do, and you are in control of that. That was the piece that I took out of that really stuck out to me. It's just that small inch and edge, but you actually control being able to create that, but it makes all the difference in the world in terms of what happens.
Hey, beautiful. With that said, Johannes, if you will, let them know about the money script one more time. I know you mentioned it, but I want to make sure people clearly understand how they can reach you or, you know, obviously catch you and Mark doing your thing on Money Script later this week as you're putting it out. But definitely get that information out right now, if you will.
Indeed, I appreciate it. So the Money Script podcast, available on all platforms. So anywhere you listen to podcasts, search the Money Script and you will find that there. Follow us on Instagram at the Money Script. Follow us on Facebook at the Money Script LLC. And look forward to hearing from all of you. Get this conversation going. Let's go buy the block.
Absolutely. Let's talk money constantly. Come to Money Motivation. Go see Money Script. I appreciate you, Mark, for allowing me to host this. Again, my name is Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. I also have a podcast every Saturday morning live, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Mental Dialogue talk show. We talk race, sex, and gender issues typically, and sometimes bring on smart brothers like this and talk finances from time to time. At this time, just to highlight, we are going to be doing a discussion that people are trying to figure out right now, which is simply how do you talk to white people about racism, something that quite often is trying to be understood and figured out within our community, a conversation that is having to happen obviously more often as we're experiencing this time of change, if you will. But as a quick reminder, if you listen to this podcast, moneymotivation.com, go to the site, and when you see something you like, I promise that you will, make sure you add the MM Podcast special code to get 20% off. Mark, any closing words before we go to our ending of the night, if you will?
Yeah, definitely. Montoya just outlined his Mental Dialogue show. If you're trying to think and get some intellectual discussion about current issues, I'm telling you, it's one of the best platforms out there right now out of Atlanta. So definitely check that out. And then what Johannes didn't mention is he's been doing these free financial investment seminars, webinars, live events type thing through social media. Look, free game. So definitely plug in with Johannes and the things that he's doing there in addition to the podcast that he mentioned. You can reach me on Instagram at Mark_Ranger, MARC_Ranger. Money Motivation on Instagram is moneymotivation.co, moneymotivation.co. And then the website, of course, is moneymotivation.com. We just rolled out some new designs, some of the dopest designs that are out there right now that are going fast. So if you go to moneymotivation.com and put in a discount code, you can take advantage of some of that, too, to get the summer kicked off.
With that said, game over. Money Motivation, again, thank you all for tuning in to the episode 6. To close it out, we usually play a little music. We're going to change it up just a little bit. Again, just being respectful of everything that's going on out there in the world, the U.S. specifically, where we're all here. But again, the entire world's looking at what's happening. And so we just wanted to be respectful of, in a sense, what people are experiencing. And so here's a poem, a spoken word piece by Crystal Valentine. And it just speaks to, if you will, the Black American experience. And again, it's just us making sure everybody understand that motivation, and again, in a sense, is with the people, if you will. So sit back and enjoy this piece by Crystal Valentine called Black Privilege.
on evaluating black privilege. Black privilege is the hung elephant swinging in the room, is the memory of a slave ship praying for the Alzheimer's to kick in. Black privilege is me having already memorized my nephew's eulogy, my brother's eulogy, my father's eulogy, my unconceived child's eulogy. Black privilege is me thinking my sister's name safe from that list. Black privilege is me pretending like I know Trayvon Martin on a first name basis. It's me using a dead boy's name to win a poetry slam. It's me carrying a mouthful of other people's skeletons to use at my own convenience. Black privilege is the concrete that holds my breath better than my lungs do. Black privilege is always having to be the strong one. It's having a crowbar for a spine. It's fighting even when you have no more blood to give, even when your bones carried you, even when your mother prayed for you, even after they prepared your body for the funeral. Black privilege is being so unique that not even God will look like you. Black privilege is still being the first person in line to meet him. Black privilege is having to have the same sense of humor as Jesus. Remember how he smiled on the cross? The same way Malcolm X laughed at his bullet, and there I go again, asserting my black privilege using a dead man's name without his permission. Black privilege is a myth, is a joke, is a punchline, is the time a teacher asked a little boy what he wanted to be when he grew up, and he said alive, is the way she laughed when she said there's no college for that, and it's tiring, you know, for everything about my skin to be a metaphor. For everything black to be pun intended, to be death intended. Black privilege is the applause at the end of this poem. It's me giving you a dead boy's body and you giving me a 10. It's me being okay with that. And I tried writing a love poem the other day, but my fingers wouldn't move. My skin started to blister like it didn't trust me anymore. Like it thought I was trading in this noose for a pearl necklace. Some days I'm afraid to look into the mirror for fear that a bullet George Zimmerman its way into my chest while I was asleep. The breath in my mouth is lucky enough to scare a courtroom. I'll be lucky if I'm alive to make it to the stand. For some people, their trials live longer than they do. Black privilege is knowing that if I die, at least Al Sharpton will come to my funeral. At least Al Sharpton will mason jar my mother's tears, remind us that the only thing we are worthy of is our death. We are judged by the number of people it takes to carry our caskets. Black privilege is me thinking that's enough. It's me thinking this poem is enough. Black privilege is this. Is this breath in my mouth right now? It's me standing right here with a crowd full of witnesses to my heartbeat.